We are go for liftoff in T-minus 30.
It's the Wheeliotis Podcast.
I like it.
All right, season's greetings, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Wheeliotis Podcast. This is episode 18. Before we jump into things, let me first bring on my co-host, the great, the wonderful Mikey Wheel. How you doing today, my friend?
Tom, season's greetings. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, as NSYNC says. Very excited to be back at episode 18. Might be able to get in 20 by the end of the year. That might be pushing it, but
maybe 19. Yeah, 20, 19. 20, I don't know. We'll see what we can do.
The sweet spot of 19. No, our last episode, a couple good horror movies, and today, if you're watching this, you can tell we're doing a little something nicer and sweeter for the holiday season.
Yeah, although some people, I mean, you know, you can maybe still categorize this movie as a horror movie in some ways, so...
I think it's like I came across yesterday, somebody cut Elf as a horror movie trailer, which I think we've all seen that by now. I know that they've done Home Alone as a horror movie trailer, but I feel like you could just upload the normal trailer and call it a horror movie trailer. And just like it would just play the same way. Maybe change the score slightly and it's still a horror movie. Yeah. Yeah, but excited to be back here. We have a very special guest today. Could be our last guest of the year. We have on Mr. Kevin Batstone from the Discussion Combustion Podcast.
Welcome. Hey, guys. Yeah, thanks for the invite, man. Thanks for thinking of me for this holiday time. Season's greetings to everybody. Excited to be on here chatting some Home Alone, chat whatever you guys want to talk about. I really like what you guys got going on, and thanks for considering me to come on.
Yeah, Kevin is an inspiration to our podcast. I did his podcast out in Colorado twice. The first time, I think I was the last person before you went to video. And then I came back and did a video episode as well with you and Arthur. So, and Tom and I have a little Google sheet of all the episodes we have planned out or, what to do. I believe we've been talking since last December about doing this episode, which shows how fast time goes and that, it's never too late to sit down and talk Home Alone.
Yeah, absolutely. We were talking about this a year ago. We were putting the pen to the paper, trying to make all the numbers work. But, I think we both got busy. Things didn't work out. And here we are a year later. Doesn't seem like a year later. But, man, time does fly when you're having fun. So, yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
It's been a very busy and very slow year at the same time. We're super excited to have you on this episode. We're going to talk a little bit about your podcast. You hit a couple great milestones recently. And then we're also going to talk about Home Alone, Christmas movies in general. We'll talk about the age-old question, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Let's kick it off with, what have you guys been watching? TV shows, movies? What have you been watching in your downtime lately?
Well, I didn't mention it last time, but a couple weeks ago, I breezed through Squid Game. And have you seen it? Have you guys seen Squid Game?
Yes.
I have not yet. I'm still behind on that.
Yeah, I am. I waited, because I don't know. It came out sometime earlier this year, but I waited a little bit to watch it too. But it's fantastic. Honestly, maybe one of the just better things in general I've watched in the past year.
Easy. Did you watch it with subtitles or dubbed over?
Subtitles.
Okay, I watched it dubbed over. Kevin, I've only watched it dubbed over, but to Kevin and our audience, I would say watch it with subtitles because the dub definitely takes away some of the serious moments. It's very over-dramatized in some of the parts. And I imagine, Tom, you didn't find any humor in the whole entire show, I imagine. It's very dark, it's violent, it's disturbing. When you watch it with the dubs, like a lot of it is kind of like dark comedy, which I don't think is what they were going for.
I will say, there is some humor in it. I mean, overall, it's a very dark show, obviously. I think there is some good humor sprinkled throughout. Really some good character moments, I think, especially with the main, our main protagonist, who starts off, his character takes a complete turn. He's completely different by the last episode. Kind of super gullible and kind of literally kind of throwing his, gambling his life away in the first episode. Very silly. And then, naturally going through what he goes through, he's a completely different person by the end. But that's what I love about it most. It's able to juggle it being almost this, like, you know, this Saw, like, you know, like a game where they're going through these really, well, on the surface, they're just kind of children's games. But obviously, the, you know, if you fail, you die. So the show gets super violent. But at the same time, no, I think it has just like really, I don't know, some of the visuals are funny. But, you know, yeah, it's super dramatic, super well written. Visually, it's really good for the most part. And just the setup, too, of the games are fantastic. Super thrilling. I know that the tug of war, the build up to the tug of war scene is one of the best things I've seen all year.
Yeah, it's and it's so relevant. I mean, last week we talked about Society, the movie that you had me watch, which is about the rich literally eating the poor and just sucking the soul and eating the life out of them so they can get richer in many different ways. And I think Squid Game is just really about today. I mean, I know it's been banned in some places in Asia and other places because they're like, this is kind of like too true to how some things actually are here. And like, this is not far off from what people have done or would do or are open to doing to survive. So, I mean, it's super interesting. I know they're already planning to remake it. I want Christopher Walken as the old guy when they remake it in America. I'm calling it right now. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And he's going to be like, wow, welcome to the Squid Games. And it's, I didn't mean to set myself up there, but I think Walken would be the best. And I would love to like, Tom, yeah. You and I should take a look at the cast and like see who's going to play who in the American version. That can be in our next episode. But yeah,
That was a great Walken impression. I'm really impressed. I mean, that's, that was, you're right in the zone there, dialed in. Squid Game, I haven't seen it. I've heard so much about it. I know my dad got pulled into it.
Yep.
You guys definitely sold me on it for sure. The only thing I heard about that I found really interesting was the director lost like 3 or 4 teeth during the production of it and the direction of it because he was so tense. He was like grinding his teeth at night and he literally lost teeth from the stress of the film.
Oh, wow.
That's not cool. I have bruxism. I grind my teeth at night, so I can relate to that. That's not cool, but it's one of those stories that's like, damn, it shows how passionate he is, how intense it was making that. And I imagine that was one of those shows, like, we're going to find out in like the behind the scenes that like when they yelled cut, everybody was joking around at craft services, like a show that's heavy. Like they have to really make sure that there's like something light going on set because there was a lot of darkness for that show. Yeah. I, of course, don't want to spoil it for Kevin or anybody, but it's a.
No, I will. I really won't give too many details at all. Other than, I mentioned the tug of war scene, but I won't really go into too many details because it just needs to be seen. But I will say what you were just saying on that is that I think a lot of these characters, you know, are kind of like goofy. Maybe they put up a facade of being like tougher or just trying to be goofy just to kind of, you know, deal with the situation, how dark it is. But there are some like crazy monologues, especially from the main protagonist. And I don't think I've seen any other movie with him in it, but like that dude can act. There are some really tense scenes in this show.
I like the dinosaurs when they brought the dinosaurs in. That's my favorite thing. Yeah. That's my favorite way to fake spoil something. I'm like, oh, you haven't seen Titanic? Wait till you get to the part with the dinosaurs. Oh, you're watching Full House? Yeah, in season 3, when they go back in time to the dinosaurs. No, it's fantastic. I recommend it to everybody. And I got to watch Money Heist next. That's the one that a lot of people have recommended to me for a while. Another show that I think is... I don't know where that one's based out of, but it's also, you can watch it dubbed or with subtitles, but Squid Game is fantastic.
Is that also Korean? Is that a Korean show or?
I don't know. I thought it was French or Spanish or one of those. I don't know.
But I don't know anything about it, but I've seen some reactions to it.
Yeah. So that's good. What else have you been watching, Tom? I know you're always watching Breaking Bad.
Oh yeah, always. But the only other show I've really gone through recently was Baskets. Zach Galifianakis show on FX. That show is also just fantastic. Had no idea what it was about, just always wanted to watch it. And I remember like when that show came out, all of the commercials for it were just these like abstract, like little like 15-second shorts. They weren't, you know, really showing anything about the narrative or about these characters. So I didn't really know anything about it, but it's definitely one of the best performances I've seen from Galifianakis.
Yeah. Louis Anderson, who got nominated for an Emmy for playing his mom.
Christine, that's one of the greatest, honestly, for me, that's one of the greatest TV characters I've ever seen.
Christine Baskets and her, is it her Costco membership? Is that what it is?
Yeah, because Costco is like the main product placement in the show. Yeah, so like she's always like, you know what always makes me feel better? A trip to Costco. And then like, and then they just go to Costco and get $1.50 hot dogs and it's great.
I thought you were going to say, I had no idea what it was about. And now I've watched all three seasons and I still have no idea what it's about. Because it is, it's not my type of show. I usually hate the kind of like raw mumblecore, just like not that funny. Just like, it's just nothing happens in the whole show. It's brilliant. Brilliantly acted, brilliantly written. And it's like, the acting is so good that if I ever met the actress who played Martha in real life, I couldn't picture her being anybody else except for Martha. Like, I can't imagine anybody's that good of an actor. I mean,
also, yeah, she's like, she feels like a real life King of the Hill character. Like, her deadpan is so on point. Also, yeah, it's the only thing I've ever seen her in, but she's so fantastic. And also, I don't know his name. But the Carpet King, the, you know, Christine's love interest in the latter half of the series, he's also great. I almost want like a spinoff of just them too, because they moved to Denver, you know, that at the end of the show, like she moves to Denver.
Oh yeah. His son plays football there or something, is going to college there, right?
Well, that might be part of it, but mainly it's his business is there. Like his whole carpet business is there, and he's like always there anyway. So she ends up just moving there to be with him. But yeah, awesome show.
Have you watched it, Kevin? Or heard of it?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it. I'll have to put that one on the list too. It's hard to find time to watch all these great shows, man. They just one after the next. It's, you know, you get caught up on one and then there's a whole other season of something else to watch. But
seriously, Mike, my every episode, Mikey's listing off like 50 shows and I'm like, how are you doing this?
So, all right, here's what I've been watching. In the background at work, I watch Will and Grace because I've never seen it before. So I always like binge watch a new sitcom.
Or, how far are you into that?
Season three, I want to say three or four. Woody Harrelson's in it now. Also rewatching Speechless, which was a great show on ABC. So I'm rewatching those. And then, yeah, at night, I mean, I'm never not watching television. In bed, I'm rewatching Modern Family. I binged all of New Girl again. I'm doing Modern Family. But for me, it's really about three or four main shows that I bring up every week. First off, I also want to bring up, I am missing the Bachelorette finale for this episode. So I just want our fans to understand how dedicated I am. And by Bachelorette, I of course mean my football team is playing a hard game today. They're matching up versus the other team. No, tonight's the finale, which is exciting. Anyway, Sunday, it's all about Sunday. Yellow Jackets on Showtime, Succession just finished up on HBO, Curb Your Enthusiasm on HBO, and the new Dexter New Blood show on Showtime. Sundays are big for me, and then This Is Us comes back January 4th, right before my birthday, final episode of that. There's just a lot out right now. I mean, I'm still binging the normal sitcoms. I got a little lost in the new Wonder Years, but I want to go back and watch that. And then I started watching Psych for the first time. I had never seen that show. I watched the main actor in it in another TV show, A Million Little Things. So I went back and decided to watch it. It's like on USA or something, and it's a very USA show, very kitschy and over the top, but I'm dedicated. I watch a lot of stuff in the background, but yeah, I mean, I know you're busy, Kevin. What have you been watching, shows or movies?
Well, I'll tell you, my favorite show on TV right now that I've been following since season one, we're in season four right now. If you guys haven't seen Yellowstone yet, it is absolutely phenomenal. My favorite drama I've watched since The Sopranos. I mean, every week it's just action packed. It's like a Wild West, you know, organized crime drama filled show that the character development's been fantastic. The writers are great. Kevin Costner's fantastic. Cole Hauser plays Rip Wheeler, my favorite character on the show. And it just every week leaves you ready for the next one. And I like that they do it that way on Paramount. You know, you tune in Sunday night, you get your new episodes, and then like everything else, we got to wait a year and a half for the new season.
Now, is it, I don't really know much about the Paramount channel. Is it like an R-rated show or is it pretty clean? Like, is it violent?
Sopranos-like? Very violent. I would say it's as you know, gruesome and nudity and language filled as The Sopranos, hands down.
Okay. I saw somebody post the other day that season four is just nowhere comparable to the first three seasons. Is that true? Does it kind of taper off?
You know, I think that the way that the storyline's been developing, everyone had different opinions of what was going to happen. And I think there's been a lot of shocking moments in the show and a lot of storyline twists that nobody saw coming. which I think can make for that kind of opinion. I've enjoyed it. I think there's been new character development that's come in that's worked well with the characters that have been there since season one, episode one. I thoroughly enjoy it, and I'm hooked every Sunday.
I've pretty much run out of TV shows, so I do need something new. I think it's one of those things that's not terribly my kind of genre, but if you recommend it, if you compare it to Sopranos, I don't think I'd turn that down. And I don't want to ask too, did you watch the Sopranos movie?
I did.
What did you think?
You know, as a big Sopranos fan, I really liked the Dickie Maltisanti story. I liked the young Tony Soprano. The fact that they used Michael Gandolfini to play, you know, a young James Gandolfini was tremendous. I thought he played it very well.
Yep.
I liked a lot of the character corporation. I liked that Joey Diaz was involved in it. A lot of things I liked about it. You know, I wasn't disappointed. I think I'd give it a good 8 out of 10. I mean, I was thoroughly impressed with it.
I feel the same way. I mean, you got to meet so many characters. Paulie with the hair coming in, like, you got to meet everybody. And it was fun to kind of pick it up before they brought it up. And you get to see how everybody wound up, you know, where they were and how they became who they were. And I want more. I mean, it's titled, of course, Saints of Newark, A Sopranos Story. I want more. I want sequels. I want prequels. I want them to return to the
universe. I mostly agree. The only thing is, after watching it, I almost feel like, I almost feel like I would have preferred if they made this like a mini series, because there's so much going on within like how it's set place in the late 60s. There's, you know, how there's race riots. There's and Dickie's story, I thought, was handled so well, especially when in Breaking Bad, we only ever hear about him. We never see him in The Sopranos. I don't think even in a flashback we see Dickie Maltisanti.
Say Breaking Bad?
What did I?
Yeah.
I haven't even been watching that much lately. God, it's just always on my mind. it's your fault. I know in the movie they recreate a scene that's in The Sopranos. There, young Tony watches. So there's a flashback in The Sopranos when young Tony watches his father getting arrested at like a fair, and from his perspective, he's mad that, like, I think he's upset that his father only took his sister to the fair. So I think they actually recreated that scene for the movie.
Cool.
And then had John Bernthal as his father in the movie, which is good casting.
The best. Oh, he just did a movie called Small Engine Repair that's really good. Kevin, I'd recommend it to you as well. I've told Tom about this. The guy who wrote, directed, and stars in the movie, it's originally a one-man play that he did. It's kind of about three like childhood friends who get revenge on somebody. And it's John Bernthal, two other guys. It takes place in Manchester, New Hampshire. It's as New Hampshire as can be. The accents are great. The camaraderie, the friendships, the sack taps, the drunkenness to it. It is just like, it's very well done. I love him in everything.
Oh, you mentioned that last time, right? I think you mentioned it's a lot of like super, like low budget. Like,
it's heavy. Yeah. Low budget and just like probably improvised, you know, just a couple dudes getting together and filming this movie. And it's very well done. Opens up on the exterior of Manchester, and it's just like an aerial view. It's cool.
And John Berthold's in it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's one of the main guys. Yeah.
Wow.
It's three guys. And I mean, I'm telling you, it's a great movie. I'm like, he's one of those people who, spoiler alert, I'm glad died off of The Walking Dead, because it like allowed him, you know, I mean, Steven Yen, is that his name? The guy from Makari?
Yeah.
I mean, he of course dies in The Walking Dead and went on to make, you know, a couple really cool action movies, and then went to make Makari, and now he's in the new Jordan Peele movie. So I mean, like,
He was in Oscar Darling Minari, like, and all that. And I feel like both of those actors have had really great post Walking Dead careers.
When one door closes.
and last episode I talked about The Punisher. I watched, there's two seasons of that. I saw the first one right before I flew back home here, but you know, he owns that. He's so good in it. And his physicality is so unique. I read an article recently, I don't know who it's from, but they mentioned that, you know, John looks like he has the kind of face that looks like his nose has been broken a couple times. Like, his, you know, like he just has like a rugged, aged kind of face. But he's cool. He's so cool.
He's one of those people on Wikipedia, you'd look it up and it was like, you know, he was going to go pro in boxing, and then a car accident like ruined his career. Then his, you know, high school coach told him to get into acting. Like, you can just tell it's one of those stories. And now Kevin, you mentioned Paramount, which is one of the 80 streaming channels. That's the one that's all of the kids shows too, right? Where you can go on and watch like all that, all of the Kenan and Kel's. Is that the same channel?
You know, I haven't dug too deep into the Paramount. I just got Paramount Plus. Here's what's interesting about Paramount Plus. And I was just talking about this with a guest we had on a couple weeks ago. Paramount right now, the biggest show on there is Yellowstone. It's their number one show. But when you get Paramount Plus, you don't get Yellowstone. It makes no sense to me. You get all the other shows. You get Mary Kingstown. You get a lot of these other programs. But Yellowstone is not on Paramount Plus. So if you're looking into getting that for Yellowstone, you're going to be disappointed. It's just not on there.
That is interesting. Yeah, I'm on their website right now. It looks like everything else, they're combining. So CBS, BET, Comedy Central, Nickelodeon, MTV, Smithsonian Channel. But I remember going on there and just watching, like, there's the new Rugrats show. I watched the new SpongeBob movie, which is great, you know, also live action. And then, you know, with my son, he's one, I'm starting to show him, like, you know, all of the kind of old things that we grew up with, the original Rugrats, Doug, all that, like, you know, watching Kenan Thompson before he became the longest running SNL member. So, I mean, it's definitely a channel I'd recommend getting.
I got to say something too about, because I've seen a few clips in the trailers for that new Rugrats show. And it just looks freaky, like
terrifying,
because like their eyes are just so wide. They don't blink that much. And also, I don't know why texturally it seems like everything looks like it's made of plastic in the show. Like their skin looks like it's the same texture as like their clothing, which is weird. I don't know why, especially if, you know, considering like that's, you might've seen that back in the day, like in Toy Story when, you know, CGI movies and shows were like first coming out, but it's weird now after all this advancements to still see that.
I did not last long on that one. I went back to the original Rugrats. I mean, Paramount's great. And then, I mean, there's just, I know that they recently rebooted Legends of the Hidden Temple.
That was a great show.
Random channel.
Yeah. So fun.
I used to love that one. Yep. I think I applied. I applied really? To that show. Yeah. When I was young, my buddy and I were like, we got to get on Legends of the Hidden Temple, man. That's where it was going down. And then there was, what was that show with the slime? It was almost like a Family Feud kind of battle.
Figure It Out with Summer Sanders.
Was that what it was? Figure It Out?
Where they had to like guess, they had like the guesses to guess what the talent was.
That might have been it. No, yeah, it was Family Double Dare. That's what it was.
I'm thinking of. Where they had Mark to like Summers, pull the flag out of the nose.
That's the one.
Yeah. Yep. Figure It Out was great too. All right. So three things for people to look up. Sorry. One, check out The Sopranos Mad TV. They do a parody of If the Sopranos was on PAX TV, which was an older channel that was pretty like family oriented. So it's basically the parody of like what an hour long Soprano episode looks like after you have to edit out 58 minutes of it. Will Sasso plays an amazing Tony Soprano. There's a great country artist, and I don't say that about many people, named Hunter Hayes. He played 32 instruments on his first album. He was on Figure It Out when he was like four, playing a New Orleans like accordion jam session song, and it was like super cool. So like if you're a fan of him, go onto YouTube, go back and watch that. And then there was something else that reminded me of another good YouTube video. It'll come back to me, but there's some extra homework if anybody wants to watch some fun videos, because every time I watched that Sopranos parody way before I watched the Sopranos, and then I watched the Sopranos and went back and I was like, it's perfect. The Sopranos video game on PlayStation 2. I mean, that game spawned a lot for, you know, media and entertainment. I saw, I think it was like a question on Jeopardy recently about the Sopranos video game. Like, yeah.
Oh, it's still... I never played the video game. I did play the pinball one, though. I was at 1UP here in Denver.
Yeah.
And they have a Sopranos pinball. And I was like, that's going to be my machine for the night. And it hit for sure.
Mine was always Twilight Zone and South Park. Those are always my go-to pinballs.
Ooh, love it.
Yeah. So I guess, what are you looking forward to, Kevin? You got any movies, TV shows coming out soon you're, you know, lining up for?
You know, everyone's been talking about, this Matrix that's coming out. I think that, you know, just for the hype of that, I'm kind of interested. I know a lot of my buddies are going to go see it this week. I might go check that out. I'm looking forward to Ozark coming out here, season 4 of Ozark. Oh, yeah. That's going to be dropping here in the, I think, mid to late January. I love Ozark. Jason Bateman's fantastic.
Is that the final season, I think, right?
So they're doing, I think it's the final season, but they're doing it in two parts. So there'll be part one that comes out, and then probably the end of 2022, part two will come out. But they got to wrap. I feel like they have to wrap it up. They're at that point where it's like, you know, it's just chaos after chaos, running away, new characters, you know, but it's so good. The drama in it, again, it reminds me a little bit of Yellowstone. It's just constant drama and edge of your seat. Like, what's going to happen next? One episode ends and you're just ready to start the next.
I think I fell off.
The tension never drops off either on that show. Like, I loved watching it, but yeah, I think it's smart to, I'm glad they're taking her out of just ending at season four or splitting it, but still not trying to like, just really, you know, stay for overstay its welcome, I guess.
I am not caught up, so I definitely need to catch up on that.
How far are you in?
I want to say season two, maybe.
Okay.
There's no real reason I stopped watching. I really enjoyed it. And the actress, the main girl that that works under him, I mean, she came out of nowhere and just swept the Emmys and everything. I mean, she's fan. Ruth? Ruth, is that her name on the show?
I believe it's played by Jennifer. It begins with a G. I follow her on IG. She's a fantastic actress. She did a show called Tomato Red before she got casted for Ozark, which was very it was a similar but different role. It was a decent movie, kind of a Midwest, very similar feel to the Missouri area that Ozark takes place in, and that's where she kind of demonstrated her acting ability, because she's a New York gal. You know, she's not a natural Midwestern badass like, you know, she portrays Ruth as, because Ruth Langmore, I think, is one of the best you know, supporting actresses that I've seen.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Julie Gardner. That's her name.
That's it.
There it is.
Yeah. And she's all, I don't know if you guys have seen, it came out in 2019, or I think it was officially released last year. The Assistant, where she played. Yeah. It was good. She's really good in it.
I haven't seen it, but who's the main actor? Is there somebody else in it? Like an actor? Who's the main actor?
I mean, she is. She's central performance in
she's
it.
She's the lead. Yeah.
Yeah.
She is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I remember hearing about that. Yeah, so I need to catch up on that. I'm looking forward to, I mean, you mentioned the new Matrix. I'm pretty excited for it. It's got a good cast, got the guy from Candyman in it, which will be really cool to see him again so soon in something. I'm excited because it's going to be on HBO Max. I mean, it's definitely a movie probably to see in theaters. I think I saw The Matrix in 4D a few years ago out in Denver, but no.
Yeah, I mean, 2019, I think they re-released it.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, for this, I'll probably watch it on HBO Max. Tom's back in New England right now, so we're going to go see the new Spider-Man movie. I still need to see the Resident Evil movie. And then Ray Donovan, the movie. They canceled the show in the last season, didn't wrap anything up, so they made a movie to kind of tie a bow on it. So that's coming out in January. This Is Us is going to be finishing up. And Doctor Strange, I can't wait for that. It's the second horror Marvel movie, Sam Raimi. I'm yeah, most excited
and
that.
I really hope that because it's Sam Raimi, because he's such an established director, like, you know, he really gets free reign on it. And especially it's in like this, supposed to be in this horror realm, which again is pretty, you know, unusual for the MCU, considering, you know, they tend to stick to a pretty like consistent template. So, you know, I'd like to see them branch out a little bit for sure.
Well, I was going to mention, I just binge watched in like 2 days WandaVision. It's on Disney Plus.
Yeah, WandaVision is awesome.
Brilliant show. And then I think I just watched all of Winter Soldier, Falcon and Winter Soldier, which is great. So definitely
that was pretty good.
Those two, yeah, fantastic. The new Captain America is a great actor. You've seen him in a bunch of stuff, and like, yeah, it's really well done. The episode 4 is really disturbing, like something Marvel, like you wouldn't see in a Marvel movie. I don't think it's really good. Highly recommend.
I'm interested.
It.
I'm actually really interested in Loki.
That's yeah, see that, like, I have no interest in the Black Widow, I have no interest in Hawkeye, I have no interest in, but I'm like, I feel I'm just nerdy enough that I have to watch everything in order and like keep up with
well
it.
First off, it's got Owen Wilson. Yeah, and I love Owen Wilson. And then also I said this before that Loki within the MCU probably one of my, if not my favorite character. I think Tom Hiddleston owns it. He's so funny, conniving, like he's great. He's great as Loki.
And I like it because Bucky, Sebastian Stan, is kind of just the serious version of Loki. Loki, or like, is he good? Is he bad? He was bad. Now he's working with us. I mean, Bucky's the same way. I mean, he's converted now and he's on the good side, but he still can kind of go back and forth if, you know, you set him off. So I like those characters a lot. I've kind of set my own guideline with the new movies and Marvel movies and superhero movies. I've started only liking them if you see where the bad guy was coming from. So like in that one year you had Thanos first come around, you find out Thanos did what he did because he wanted to like get his family back, because I think that like something, or like the whole universe was responsible for his family dying. Whatever the Thanos reason was, it kind of made sense. That same year, Josh Brolin played Cable in Deadpool 2. And that, I remember, like, that was because of his family. He did what he did, and, like, it made sense. In the Aquaman movie, the people underwater want to destroy Earth because we've polluted the ocean so much. So, like, I've started to get to the point where I'm like, I really only like it if there's, like, a good motive from the bad guy. And I also really only like it when the superhero kills people. I mean, Falcon and Winter Soldier, like, they kill people on the show. I'm just, I don't care for Batman anymore. I can't keep watching Batman, like, handcuff Joker and Riddler after they just, like, blew up a school bus and be like, yeah, going to prison. And then they break out 5 minutes later and blow up another building of people. And I'm just like, I can't do it. I can't do it.
Well, like, I know within MCU, earlier movies, maybe in phase one and two, you had like, Ronan in Guardians, who was a pretty, like, stock, I'm going to control the universe kind of villain with, like you said, no real because motive you can connect with, or you can really see where they're coming from. So yeah, I agree. I think Marvel has gotten a lot better at that. I think, even though I don't love the movie, I think Killmonger from Black Panther is one of their better villains.
Oh God, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan is awesome in that role, and again, he has a really good backstory. So,
Black Panther also plays the Black Panther, but the Black Panther storyline and some of the cast is in Falcon and Winter Soldier. So. Recommend that, because Black Panther ends with Bucky in one of their like tents. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What about you, Tom? Have we covered what you're looking forward to besides hanging out with me?
You mentioned The Matrix. Definitely looking forward to it. I have not seen I've seen the first one obviously a lot. It's great. It's a great movie. And I saw it in theaters back in 2019, like you said, they put it out for the 20th anniversary, I think, 20 year anniversary. So I saw that in IMAX, which was amazing. But the other two I've not seen in quite some time. And there's also, they made like an anime too. Maybe like 10 plus years ago. But I mean, it looks cool. And I support the Wachowskis. I know this one, this one's not by both Wachowski sisters, but still, I love all their stuff too. And so definitely
I remember that video game, the Matrix video game on PlayStation.
So good.
Yeah
so good. Have you guys seen the footage for there's a new Matrix game, and I don't know if it's Unreal Engine. I'm not good with video game stuff at the moment, but like they showcased some footage from a new Matrix game, and like the footage looks incredible, like the lighting, everything, textures. It's we're getting so much closer to like actual photorealism in video games. It's really wild.
I have seen a little bit of that, and I wasn't gonna try to rush to buy the PlayStation 5. I'm always like a year or two behind. I love Madden, but I'm still playing Madden 18. I don't need to play Madden 22, 27, 28. I'm the same way, where like PlayStation 4 does what I need. But I did just watch a trailer for an Avatar video game coming out on PlayStation 5, and I'm like,
Is that going to be like the first real Avatar game? I just realized I don't think they've made one, which is kind of crazy.
Like, I will sell everything I own to buy a PlayStation 5 and the Avatar game until the movies come out. We are of course here to talk to Kevin about Home Alone. And why would we have anybody else besides a guy named Kevin on to talk about Home Alone? It's very fitting. But let's kind of talk about discussion combustion a little bit. First, Tom and I are going to bring up our sponsors, water.
Good old water.
70% of the earth, 70% of you, water, trees. We have trees. I think there's one behind Tom in his picture. And then our first actual real sponsor. I don't know what makes a real sponsor. My friend, two of my best friends run a company called Ridgelight Studios. They're based out of New Hampshire. If you need real estate photography, product photography, if you need any kind of photography, drone photography, they'll do it for you. So definitely check them out. That is Ridgelight Studio. But let's get into, discussion combustion. How long you've been doing this podcast for?
It feels like much longer than it actually has been. We launched February 27th of 2019. The first episode that we ever did was on a cell phone. It sounded really horrible. I mean, it couldn't have gotten any worse. It was just a cell phone propped up in the corner. And we're like, let's send it and see what happens. You know, yeah. And from there, we got pretty fortunate with our old studio, which Mikey, you've been in. Well, in fact, yeah, that's the only studio you've been in. You haven't been in our new one yet. You know, our old studio owner, Jamie, was a guy I played in the Ridge Runners with, which was a country rock band here in Denver. And he said, look, I got all the space down in my basement, build a studio down there. And that's where we really started getting some traction with this thing, you know, and doing the audio stuff and having great guests come in. And then from there, it's been a fun ride, man. You know, we joined YouTube in early 2020, like a month before the pandemic hit, which that was interesting to spend a large investment on equipment and then not be able to use it for 3 months, you know, hey, patience is a virtue in this game.
Yeah. And I mean, I know you've been doing video for a while. Like I mentioned before, I think when we were just talking before, I think I was your last guest before you moved to video. I mean, you have people in studio. You do it just like we do, you know, from one place to another. You do, you know, the Zoom calls, of course. And how'd you meet Arthur? You know, how did you guys get started?
Yeah, that's always a fun story to tell. Arthur and I have known each other a long time. One of the first guys that I met when I came to Colorado, I was living in a one bedroom. I used to drink beer out of my patio. Not much has changed. And, you know, he'd come home from work and he'd be like, hey, man, can I get one of those? He was just that kind of guy. Like, hey, I'll have a beer with you, you know, at random. So it was kind of him just being, you know, asking me for a cold Budweiser that started a great friendship. And wow. it became a tradition, you know, 5 o'clock. It was like, all right, man, beer time, beer time. Finally, he's like, hey, can I hop this railing? Like, can I come on that side of your patio and be included? And when his feet landed on the other side, man, it was an instant friendship. And, you know, about a decade later, it was like, let's do a podcast. You know, let's do it.
Wow. I don't, of course, support cigarette smoking. I'm about a year and a half cigarette free. But I made so many friends when I smoked cigarettes, whether it was just outside my apartment, letting somebody borrow a lighter at a concert, at a show. I met like friends that I still like keep in touch with just because I smoke. So don't smoke cigarettes, but definitely drink beer out on your patio and make some friends that way. That's great. And I mean, how many episodes do you guys have out right now? For you're coming up on the 3 year anniversary.
Yeah. So, you know, with the pandemic there, we lost a couple months of production. Obviously we shut the studio down completely. We didn't do the Zoom thing right away until we got kind of in this new position. We are getting ready to record episode 134 tomorrow night.
So you're looking at about, how many is that a year? About 40 a year?
Yeah. That, give or take. I think it averages out somewhere in there.
So Tom and I are not doing too hot for episode 19. No,
we're in about a year, almost a year and a half, maybe I'd say.
I think so. Slow and steady.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's not necessarily about, you know, the race to the finish, so to speak, or how many episodes you're cranking out. Yeah. You guys do a good job at good, you know, putting out good quality content. And that's one thing that Art and I always preach here at Discussion Combustion is consistent quality content, whether that's one a month, you know, one every 2 weeks, one a week, whatever that looks like, you know, that's what I think drives a successful podcast.
And I guess, you know, what is Discussion Combustion? You know, what is, do you have anybody you don't interview? Do you have a kind of motto? What does that kind of look like?
Yeah. I mean, the mission statement that we developed pretty early on, you know, it didn't come to us until about episode 18, right around where you guys are at. You know, we just started out as just, let's just throw stuff on the wall and see what sticks. And so we developed the mission statement, which is to be critical, loving, and accepting, you know, providing a platform for any and everybody to be heard on, whether you're Joe Rogan, Joe the plumber, you know, there really isn't any off limits for us. We want to talk to any and everybody, regardless of what your background looks like, you know, what you do for a living. They're all our peers, you know, and that's how we viewed this industry. And man, we've met some great people along the way.
And what a way to relate to everybody. I mean, you capture an audience of everybody because you have everybody on from all different walks of life, all different careers, all different things like that. And I know you had a Tiger King actor on as well. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, John Rinke from Tiger King. For anyone who hasn't seen Tiger King yet, you should check it out. Great, great show on Netflix for sure. We got hooked up with him early this year. So it was the beginning of 2021. We reached out and said, hey, man, we'd like to get you on the show. And we built a good relationship with John since then. And he came on, had a good time. He was literally driving his truck from, I think, Arkansas back to Texas. And like, he's like, oh, I got to be on this podcast. So he pulls his truck over in the middle of nowhere and jumps on this cell phone Zoom. That's how committed John Rinke was. Probably one of the realest guys, honestly, out of that whole crew.
That's so cool. And, you know, how did you get in touch with him? How did you get him to join you?
It was, you know, just reached out on social media, just to send him a message and said, hey, we, you know, would this work for you? He said, yep, I'm in.
No, I think that that's the biggest kind of thing that Tom and I would recommend too, is two episodes ago, we had on the director of one of my favorite movies this year. He made the new Wrong Turn movie, and I just found his email online, was like, want to come on a podcast? And he was like, sure, why not? And I was like, Are you sure?
Yeah.
So, I mean, definitely reach out. I mean, we did Halloween, and I reached out to Jamie. I can't think of her name. Who's the main person in Halloween?
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah. I reached out to Jamie Lee Curtis on Instagram. She hasn't seen it. She never responded, but like, there's no reason to not reach out to anybody. Nobody's ever going to, you know, tell you to F off or anything. They just probably won't respond to you. So
that's so true. Yeah. And there's, you know, social media gives us a lot of avenues to connect with people. That's one of the ways to do it. You know, the other way that we found success with finding guests is through booking agent sites, you know, whether that be IMDb Pro or booking agent info. You know, sometimes paying for that subscription gives you access to publicists and managers and agents that you wouldn't normally have access to. And just reaching out, I mean, we reached out to John Krasinski. We were trying to get John Krasinski on.
Nice.
And, and his publicist was like, look, John would love to, but he's flat out right now in production. So, you know, you don't know until you ask. I guess that would be my advice.
Yeah. And John Krasinski's from Boston, so you guys would have, you know, some things to talk about. Yeah.
Oh, he's coming on.
Is he? That's so cool. Yeah.
When the time's right.
Yeah. Oh, that'll be exciting. That'll be worth the wait, definitely. And, you know, I think Tom and I talked about that a little bit, paying for IMDb so we could, like, get through to people a little bit easier. And, you know, because everybody's reaching out to these people on their Instagram. How else can we get through to these people? And that's definitely a great option. So who do you have for guests coming on? Who are they? What are they coming on to talk about?
Yeah, so we got a Christmas special we're getting ready to shoot this week. We have a meteorologist from Fox 31 Denver. Her name is Kylie Burse. She's pretty renowned in the weather industry. She's moved around, I think, from Minnesota. She's been in Denver for a while. So she'll be joining us tomorrow night to do our Christmas special. And then we're closing out the year with one of our sponsors, Mountain Made CBD. The CEO of that will be coming on. He's done our show several times. He was the first to do it this year and now the last. So we figured that was a great way to close out the year.
A sandwich podcast. That's the way to do it. And yeah, Mountain Made CBD is really cool. I'm you know, you can't smoke weed and have anxiety, really. That's not really a thing. So, you know, people always tell me, find the right strain. I'm like, I don't want to get more anxious trying to do that. But Mountain Made CBD is just like straight up CBD flower and joints. So it doesn't give you the high, and it just kind of helps with, you know, muscle or pain or anything like that, or just, you know, so that. And how are they doing? I know that they were doing pre-rolled joints and a few other things, right? Are they still coming out with new products?
Yeah, they're kind of in a business reschedule position right now, you know, at the end of the year, reanalyzing what products work and what products, you know, aren't. And I think for them, they're really focusing on the ones that move, which, you know, they push the Build, the Boost. Those are two of my favorite products, you know. And yeah, they're doing well. They're still with us. We've kind of readjusted the way we, you know, work together as sponsors rather than doing, you know, Mikey, you remember our formal ad reads, how we would open the show. We don't really do that anymore. It felt a little bit too, I don't want to say scripted, because we would, you know, do it off the top and just roll with it. But we found through R&D and looking at analytics that people weren't paying attention to that. They were skipping straight to when the guests would come on. So it was, we were kind of spinning our wheels with those ad reads. So we're trying different things, dropping it mid-ep, like what you guys just did, you know, working it into different social promos. So there's always something that could be done different.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's good to know. We definitely want to dip more into our analytics soon and realize what works, what doesn't. We did a Facebook ad recently. And Discussion Combustion, you recently hit a milestone, which is super exciting. Tell us about how you found out, when you found out, how you guys celebrated.
Yeah, that was, it's still surreal, man. Like I said, going back to that horrible cell phone recording that we really never thought anyone would ever want to listen to having a million views on YouTube, man, it was, you know, we got the notification, congrats on a million views. And it was like, that's just, it kind of blew us away. You know, it blew us away for two guys that drink beer and sit around this table every week to hit a million views. It was very humbling. And
that's just YouTube, right? That's not everything put together.
Yeah. That's just our YouTube audience, which has now taken over our audio plays, so to speak. I mean, Spotify is our next best performing platform, you know, and that's, you know, right around the 6 to 7K mark a week. So, But it just depends. You know, every week's different. Depends on the guest. Depends on the content. Depends on what's going on. But the fact remains, a million views, man. That's it's definitely something to celebrate. You know, it's always good to celebrate those accomplishments for sure, and then just move on. Now we're on, we want 10 million. You know, it's on to the next.
I was gonna say, how long do you bask in it before you're like, all right, how let's move on? How are we gonna reach 2 million? What did we not do? What do we need to do next?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. It's always good to try to innovate and look at, you know, the data. And right now, the trajectory, you just watch that. The line is going up, you know, and that's something's working, right? So we're just kind of sticking with what's working right now. And, you know, there's really no reason to change the business model or anything like that at this time. It's just going to take more time, more episodes, more content. You know, like you guys saw with it, we get some of those bigger caliber guests, like, you know, the director of Wrong Turn and that. You start to bring in a different audience and a different dynamic. And when they retweet your stuff or whatever, you know, that's how this thing's going to grow. Networking.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Big time.
Cross promotion. It's not a real phrase. That's what I call it. Cross promoting each other's podcasts and stuff like that. And you helped us get our podcast off the ground. Cause I remember asking you about, you know, you told me about Buzzsprout and how to advertise and how to get it all out to different places at one time. I'm currently trying to humble brag. I'm looking up right now our episode that we did to see how many plays it's at. This is how long ago we did it. I had hair when we recorded it. And I look super sweaty in it, but we are at 31,000 views on that episode, and I don't know how or why, but I'll definitely take it, which is super, super exciting. So
you do hold the record, and I'll make sure to do a clip of this episode and promote you guys as well. But Mikey Wheel holds the record for the most YouTube views in one single episode on Discussion Combustion thus far. There's been a few that have gotten really close, but you're still there.
I don't know why, but man, I'll take it. Yeah, that's super exciting. 31.
It is. Bad.
That's, I've been making YouTube videos for more than half my life, and I have one video that is 43,000 plays. Everything else is like 500, just 500, not even 1,000.
Yeah.
And that was I took a Christmas vacation and I turned it into a horror movie trailer. So it's not even anything I did. It's nothing original. It's nothing I created. So 31,000 is awesome. And a million plays is great. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, seriously.
And,
yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. So we are of course here to talk about Home Alone, Christmas movies in general. I think Tom and I were trying to figure out how many Home Alones there were.
Just six, right?
Together.
I think.
Sounds right.
Home Alone 2, Home Alone 3, Home Alone 4, and then the new one.
I don't know if it's called Home Alone 5, but I think the fifth one is with Malcolm McDowell's in it. Yeah, and then there's the new one, Home Sweet Home Alone, I think it's called, right?
Yep.
Now I like that. The new one is co-written by Mikey Day of SNL. It's got Keaton Thompson, Pete Holmes. It's got who else is in it? Rob Delaney. Ellie Kemper. It's got a great like comedy cast. And I kind of like these like new movies where you're like, all right, back in 1990 when Home Alone came out, you didn't have Bluetooth, you didn't have drones, you didn't have Siri. What is that like in a new Home Alone movie? And that's what the new one kind of talks about. And the new one has like a twist to it, you know. They're not exactly robbers. It's got a cool twist, but nothing relates, nothing comes close to the original one. Like I said, I rewatched it today. I teared up at it. I mean, it's a fantastic movie. Of course, the whole world is now finally in love with Catherine Hara after Schitt's Creek. But, you know, I rewatched A Mighty Wind the other day. I mean, she's been around forever, just killing it. She's in this movie. She's in the second one, Home Alone, Lost in New York.
Yeah. And
yeah.
I got to say, too, like, you know, obviously, I'm sure we've all watched this movie at a young age, and I guess I gotta ask, like, you know, do you roughly have some like original memories that you can recall from like first watching this, and maybe how it's changed like watching it recently? Or Kevin, I know like you said this is kind of a regular kind of Christmas movie you watch yearly, or
yeah it's definitely one that's become, you know, my girlfriend and I were looking for like the Christmas movie that we watch together every year, and that's become the one. And I loved it growing up. My brother, he's a little bit older than I am. I was born in 1989. He was born in 82. So a little bit of an age difference there, but that's still like our favorite. We still quote it throughout the year. There's just so many great little lines in it that we have so much fun with. And I remember watching it as a kid. I loved it. I mean, I remember being a little, there were scenes where, you know, they could be startling. There were scenes where you would laugh. Everybody always liked to see the, you know, when Harry and Marv are breaking into the house, those were the funny scenes. So I think as I got older and the more I watched it, I started to appreciate some of those more humbling scenes, like where, you know, Kevin and the South Bend Shovel Slayer sitting in church and they kindle a relationship.
Yeah, it seems beautiful.
You know, just the meaning. Yeah, it is.
And I took notes, of course, as I always do. We'll kind of jump around with the movie. So what was its name? The South Bend
Shovel Slayer. I think that's what they refer to him as. Remember, you know, there's that scene where Buzz is, you know, freaking him out. He's out there like that. When we first see him in the movie, he's out there salting the sidewalks, and
he murdered his whole family.
Yeah.
He puts their bodies in the salt so they don't smell. Very gruesome. What I loved about it is, I think, well, first off, to talk about, you know, growing up watching this movie, I remember having the recorder from Home Alone 2. The recorder where you'd record and play back. I remember having that. I remember the Home Alone Super Nintendo and Game Boy game very, very well. The left-right side-scroller as Kevin jumping on stuff. But I think that my favorite part about the Shovel Slayer right behind Tom is that, one, all of us had a guy like that or a woman like that that we grew up down the street from. And my mom would always say, you know, go to their house. They're always the ones who are going to like die and leave you like $1 million. You know, like, they're not scary. Their house isn't haunted. Nobody else is talking to them. Like, go there for Halloween, go become friends with them. Like, they're the ones that are going to have the craziest stories and be the most interesting people out there. And I think another really good moral about him in this movie is he sits down with Kevin in church. He tells Kevin, you know, inspires Kevin to kind of change some things up about his own life. And then Kevin inspires him to call up his son so he can reunite with his family, which he does at the end. And it's just like, Kevin is this little kid. He just, you know, eats pizza and runs around the house with his siblings. But here he is reuniting a man with his son and their family. And it just really goes to show that we can learn just as much from kids as kids can learn from us. I thought that was a really cool part of the movie.
Yeah, and what's kind of funny watching it again recently is that, you know, the beginning of the movie, you know, everyone's scrambling around trying to prepare for the flight the next morning, you know, going to France. And, you know, Kevin's just kind of being dumped on. Everyone's saying how small he is, how he's, you know, he's dumb. He can't take care of himself. But it's like, I mean, obviously, that's kind of the point of the movie, too. We learn that he clearly can. But like, you know, this was the movie that obviously made Macaulay Culkin a star, one of the biggest child stars ever. And like, you know, it's such a great child performance, too, because like just the way he carries himself and talks, it's like he, I don't know, he has this like certain level of confidence that coming from a kid of his age is just really funny. But like, it's, you know, it's easy to watch this movie again and be like, OK, it makes sense why he blew up the way he did. And, you know, why this movie became such a huge hit, because some analytics about it is that I think, yeah, this was for like 21 years, this was the highest grossing, I think, live action comedy movie until The Hangover Part Two.
Really?
Yeah. I think I read that earlier. Yeah. There's a lot of interesting facts about Home Alone, that being one of them. You know, what I learned today is that I don't know if you guys ever saw Uncle Buck, classic with John Candy, who of course plays Gus Polinski in Home Alone, you know, plays in the polka band. So the role that was developed for Kevin McAllister was specifically developed for Macaulay Culkin. They didn't cast other actors for that role. They knew, the director of Uncle Buck knew, hey, we got this idea to do Home Alone and we want Macaulay Culkin to play it. Cause of course he played in Uncle Buck as well. I think that came out a year or two prior.
Oh, cool.
So they already had this idea that, hey, he's the guy to do this. Let's send it.
Wow. I also want to bring up that John Candy, I remember being in the kitchen with my mom and hearing that he died on the radio, and I was a kid. And I remember that was like the first celebrity death, or even like death that was really close, that like really hit home and made me feel emotional. I mean, he was one of the best out there. And I mean, that whole scene in the movie is fantastic when they're in the back of the U-Haul truck playing polka music. One of the facts I remember reading a couple years ago is Christopher Columbus, the director, didn't want, when Kevin looks at the picture of Buzz's girlfriend, he goes, "Buzz's girlfriend, woof." I think they originally had a little girl in the picture frame, and Christopher Columbus didn't want the girl to get bullied, didn't want the girl to think that she was ugly, because she's now in this movie that now, you know, is everywhere forever. But I'm pretty sure the picture of Buzz's girlfriend is the actor who played Buzz with a wig on. It's something like that, or it's Christopher Columbus's son with a wig on or something like that, but he made that like edit because he didn't want to like make this girl feel bad. And I think that that's like a super cool fact and goes to say a lot about who the director is, because times were different back then. You could do that stuff and easily get away with it, and he chose not to do that.
Right. Yeah, I know, like, behind the scenes, you know, yeah, Chris was apparently, like, you know, he kept everything very light, considering, like, it seemed like this, I mean, you know, no movie is easy to make, but like, considering what they were working with here, you know, and especially like there's so much stunt work, you know, especially obviously at the end. So like, and obviously, you know, Chris Columbus, like I always forget about him, but like he's made some of like the most like prolific, like children's like live action movies. I mean, he made 10 years later, he went on to make, I think he made the first two, he directed the first two Harry Potter movies, obviously Home Alone 1 and 2. Like he's really made some like notable, like very notable, like kids movies. But yeah, like, just, yeah, they're like, you know, like Kevin said, there is a lot of like really cool facts about this movie. Another one being, you mentioned, John Candy's scene, and apparently he literally took that role just because, he had to do a favor for John Hughes, who was, you know, writer and producer of this movie. And he had such a short window. I think they shot his scenes, he shot in a day. All of John Candy scenes were shot in a 24-hour period. I think they literally filmed for like 24 hours too. Like they, you know, they're like, all right, we have John Candy, we can't mess this up, you know. That's fascinating.
I can't imagine what the bloopers or outtakes between John Candy and Captain O'Hara must have been. I mean, that whole scene in the back of the truck is, it's fantastic. I definitely need to go back and watch more of his stuff. I think he's one of those people who, like, I've seen Cool Runnings, I've seen Home Alone, I've seen just the classics. I want to watch everything that the guy did. I mean, he was comedic genius of back then.
Oh, yeah, he was a legend for sure. I mean, yeah, I you know, The Great Outdoors, another good one with Dan Aykroyd. Obviously, Uncle Buck. Home Alone was great. But, yeah, I was literally just reading that they shot all those scenes in one day, John Candy's piece. And he had I wouldn't say a significant role, but a big enough role, yeah, you know, of meeting her in the airport and like, hey, we can get you back to Chicago, you know.
And that's the thing too, it's not just his character doesn't just exist in one scene. He's in the airport, he's in the back of the truck, so like, you know, it is crazy that they were able to do that in one day.
I'm sure the whole production crew was like, we'll shoot for 24 hours. Like, it's John Candy, he's gonna be a great part of this movie. I thought, just watching the beginning, that I thought Kevin was lucky to be left home alone, because his family's terrible. I wanted their house to, you know, like when you watch a horror movie and you're like, eh, I didn't mind that character getting killed by Jigsaw or whatever. Like, you know, I wanted their house to get robbed. They're way too wealthy. They have way too much money. They just go to France and Japan. No, that's the new one. They just go to all these places just with all of their money. And I was like, they're all terrible people. The uncle's awful. They had too many kids. They chose to have too many kids. And I was just like, this family's truly, truly awful. They leave the pizza guy waiting to pay him.
The cop. Well, he's not really a cop, but I will say, what's,
a lot of people didn't know that. So a lot of people, like, people are, I guess the younger generation are now realizing that Joe Pesci in the opening scene was the cop and also was the robber. Like, people
really
didn't put that together. One thing I don't think I caught on, I guess maybe back in the day, was when the pizza and the soda spill and they scrape it all into the trash, that's when Kevin's
passport
gets thrown into the trash. I always just thought they forgot him because they're rushing out because the alarm clock. And then also there's a scene in the airport where some other kid is lost and they're doing a head count and they count that kid. So subtle.
And well, I will say, it's interesting because you brought up how, you know, these parents are terrible. And when I was finding an image for my background here, I found a Vice article from like 2016, and they were talking, and it literally, the title of it was, I think it was like, Why Old Man Marv is the Worst Character in Home Alone. And I was like, okay, I'm like, I don't know, I don't agree with that. And then I just read the first paragraph, and they're talking about how, like, here at Vice, like, we notoriously like hate the Home Alone movie, like the first one, because it's mean-spirited. And then, like, I know, like, there's certain like dissenters who say that this movie is like incredibly mean-spirited. Which I think is kind of funny, because I don't know, you have to, like, for instance, like, sure, like, they literally were on the plane when they realized they forgot one of their sons, but like, I don't know, one, it's a movie, so it's like, you know, you should be able to kind of be able to stretch that, but
it's the 90s,
you know, but like, I mean, the second they find out, it's like they do everything in their power to get back, you know. So, and again, it's like, you know, this is, you know, this movie shows its date when, you know, just the fact that they have to call the police and they don't have cell phones. They can't just directly call Kevin or vice versa. And I think you posted a meme about that like a couple of days ago or something about like,
and everything's set up in the beginning with the fire pole going out and everything sets itself up to why he's going to be home alone by himself.
Like, yeah, like clearly it's ridiculous, but it's like, again, it's, I don't know. Like it's funny if that's the reason, like you're applying like this level of logic to it and you're just mad that, you know, like it's not fitting it. I don't know. It's just kind of funny to me.
I mean, Catherine O'Hara immediately lands in France and turns around and does everything she can to get home to him 5 minutes before she would have gotten home just taking the flight the next morning.
Yeah, but like, that's true.
You know, the moment the dad has when he comes in and sees Kevin is really sweet. And even the moment him and Buzz have, like him and when Buzz is super impressed that he went food shopping by himself and the whole family's impressed.
Oh, those scenes are great too.
I made the mistake of going right into part two at the end of part one. And I was just like, oh, I hate this family again. Like the second one is the exact same formula. Kevin doesn't do anything wrong, but the whole family hates him. And then he gets left alone again.
Yeah. It's kind of funny how they wrote that. And I like that too. When you watch it back to back, you feel this warm ending to the first one, of course. And then the second one starts out again. They're climbing into the shuttle vans, just like they did the first time when they did the head count. And they're like, Kevin, and he's up in the front seat. Like, all right, we're good. They get to the airport. He's trying to put his batteries in. You know, he's chasing after a guy that looks like his old man. And here we go again. He's on a flight to New York and they're in Florida, I think.
Yeah. Yep. I was like, what happened? They went from France to Florida. That's not that.
In a shitty hotel too. I mean, it was not a nice place that they were staying at. You know,
did somebody get laid off in the family, but made them like where they were like, if we forget Kevin, let's at least be domestic and not be too far away. I like the line where he says, does Santa have to go through customs? And I was like, this was like a pre 9/11 and pre everything movie with just innocence to it, where like I'm sure the scene of them going through, you know, the terminals and all of that, like half of that could probably not happen today. Just have a frantic family just like fighting over each other in the airport
and running security. Running full speed, you know, and yes. Which also
it's suspicious.
Yeah, that scene too in the first one when they're all just, you know, the whole family's booking it down there. That scene apparently took just that one shot of them running took like a whole week to film because I think that scene had the most extras out of any scene. So like the placement and everyone walking by had to be so precise so they wouldn't, you know, just run full speed into anybody. So like they obviously like tripped over each other multiple times and like, yeah, it just took them so long just to get that one shot of them all running.
So many actors, so many kid actors. You have Big Pete from Pete and Pete in the movie. I mean, there's a lot of like good actors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cast was great. The cast was really good. And there was just so many fun facts that I learned about this movie getting ready to do this cast with you guys. And one of the other ones that I heard today was child labor laws came into effect when they were producing and filming this movie. And there was a couple scenes there where Catherine had to talk to a tennis ball in place of where Kevin was going to be to get that shot. Because Macaulay Culkin couldn't work that late on the set. They were working through the night. Right. It's a lot of long nights, you know?
Wow. That's because even in like the early 90s, you're like, wow, they actually had like things back then. Like that definitely makes sense to today, but that's interesting. This is probably one of the first movies that started to actually put those things into play.
I was reading something about how I don't know if this is the case nowadays, but I think, Macaulay Culkin could only film until like 10 p.m. or something. But I feel like it might be even like, earlier now for kids of that age. Cause I don't know, he was about like 8-9 years old when he made this. I don't know. I feel like for nowadays it'd be even earlier for a kid that age, and again, we haven't even talked about the Wet Bandits yet, but like, you know, all the traps, took incredible amounts of planning and, you know, it's funny cause even on set, they were like, yo, like if this actually happened to any of these guys, like they'd have brain damage and they'd be dead, you know, cause like it's, you know, they get hurt in this movie and in the second one too. I mean, really all of them, but like these first two, some of these traps are brutal, like
super violent. Like how does this kid, I think I read an article a few years ago that like Kevin is Jigsaw, like this whole universe is like a prequel to Saw, and you're kind of like, yeah, it's not too far off. That kind of makes sense.
Humble beginnings. Like, I don't know. Well, it's funny because, again, that's another thing I've heard, like, some dissenters who are like, oh, it's so mean-spirited. Kevin's this cruel little sadistic kid. And it's like, well, I mean, people are breaking into his house. I mean, and, like, I don't know. Yeah, he could call the cops, sure.
If you watch, I mean, I feel like we can talk about this on the podcast. If you watch the new Home Alone movie, it is a lot more sadistic because, like, they're not, like, robbers hell-bent on, like, robbing his house. And, like, I mean, they also, like, threaten to kill him. I mean, yeah. Joe Pesci puts him up on the door and is like, I'm going to bite all your fingers off one by one. Yeah. And you're like, this is violent. Like, I know you were just in Goodfellas and everything, but, like, this is violent. Like,
which, by the way, it's crazy that this Goodfellas and Home Alone came out the same year.
Were they? Yep. Yeah, the exact same. That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Joe Pesci. Some interesting things about Joe Pesci's role. For one, they offered it to Robert De Niro first.
Oh, and yeah.
I don't know if I could see Robert De Niro playing Harry as well as Joe Pesci did, but that's kind of that typecasted thing. And of course, you know, being that Goodfellas just dropped out and knowing Joe Pesci as an actor, you know, he's dropping F-bombs every 3 seconds. So it was, you hear him saying, oh, fridge up, fridge up, free. He's getting all fired up and he can't use profanity, of course. And so I think that was a challenge for him.
I love that that cartoon, like, swearing, you know, you're not really saying anything.
Yeah. It's just yeah. Let me do my impression of Robert De Niro if he were in Home Alone.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you. That's Robert De Niro in Home Alone. I think it's funny because, Kevin, you say, sorry, I'll leave more room for audience laughter there. I think it's one of those things where Kevin says, I can't imagine anybody else but Joe Pesci. But the interesting thing is, if it was Robert De Niro, we'd be sitting here saying, I can't imagine anybody else but Robert De Niro. Like, I think both of them would have played the role so well. Both of them would have, like, really killed it. But Daniel Stern, I feel he's so underrated. I mean, yeah, he's like,
I would agree.
He's the narrator on The Wonder Years, right?
Is he?
I didn't know that. That's a fun fact.
Yeah, pretty sure. Yeah. And he's great. He's done some good movies. I do want to bring up, there's a movie called Better Watch Out. It's kind of sold as an R-rated Home Alone, but it's it stars the kid from M. Night Shyamalan's The Visit. The very, very funny kid in the movie who's, like, rapping the whole movie and all of that. It's a very, very R-rated movie called Better Watch Out, about this babysitter who's babysitting these two boys, and then these people show up at the house, and it's a giant twist. It's super messed up and disturbing. Definitely recommend it. Christmassy movie. It's called Better Watch Out. So if you do like the Home Alone as a horror movie trailer, watch Better Watch Out, because it's essentially that as well.
Okay. When did that come out?
I would say like 2 or 3 years ago, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty good.
I'll check it out.
I think there were a few things about this movie that made me, like, think if this movie were real, like, I think why the French hate Americans so much is because of what happened in Home Alone. Like, as soon as they get to France, they're just frantic and they're awful and they're in the airport and she's taking the phone and she's doing that. And I was just watching it. Like, this is why the French hate us.
Right.
Because of this. All because of this one reason.
Yeah, Home Alone hurt our national relationship with France.
Yeah.
Yep, fun fact.
That's exactly why. And I think it's the reason why people don't trust the police either. I mean, Kevin. So in that scene where they almost hit Kevin in the car, and it's the Wet Bandits, and Joe Pesci smiles and his gold tooth shines, and Kevin steps back. Is Kevin stepping back because of the gold tooth, or because he remembers him as the cop in the beginning in the house?
Yeah, I think he recognizes him. I think that's like the first instance. Yeah. Like, he's like, okay, like, I don't know who this guy is, but he's up to no good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right, because he does. When Kevin comes down the stairs, you know, and Joe Pesci's like, no one's parents are here. No one's parents are here. It's just a wild house. He sees the gold tooth smile, you know. He's like, Merry Christmas, bud, and winks at him kind of the same way. And I think that's a good question, though, because they almost run the guy over, so he could be freaking out about a couple things. But I think he does remember him as the cop.
There's a lot of foreshadowing in it. And then it's also a super 90s movie where everything is so obvious and so just handed to you. And, like, you know, Kevin breaks the fourth wall when he talks to the camera. And I love that about it. Like, there's no rules in this movie. They did what they wanted to. John Hughes, Christopher Columbus, great combination.
I forgot about that. How many times he does, like, kind of just address the camera, or, you know, this has that, like, 90s mugging, like, just mugging at the camera, like, kind of like earnest movies or whatever.
Ferris Bueller style.
Yeah.
Yep. Where it's absolutely. Like, who is he talking to? And I had to write down the part with John Candy where he talks about they had like big hit songs that sold 623 copies in Sheboygan. It's like, I imagine a lot of it was improvised and it's just so funny. It's just.
It's classic. Polka polka.
Yeah. I love it. I love like the bullying in this movie is something that's so different than what you'd see today. I mean, the part where Kevin's in church talking to the shovels layer and he's like, I can't wear that to school. My friend wore dino pajamas to school and got his ass kicked.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean,
just, that whole part is just so over the top. I really love it. And yeah, he's just so mature for his age. That's what I love about it. He goes food shopping. He's asking the store clerk if the toothpaste is
American Dental Association verified or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And she asked the stock boy, he's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also, you know, once again, watching it when you're older, watching it now being a father, I love the scene of John Candy talking to Catherine O'Hara because, like, it plays out as a joke where she's like, yeah, but have you ever left your kid behind? And he's like, no. But I love that scene where he knows that she's frantic. She's in the back of the truck. They're all playing polka music. And he's like, listen, we've all done this stuff. You know, I forgot my kid at a funeral parlor one time. And, like, that moment between the two of them is so genuine and so sweet because he's just this big goofball in the movie, but he talks about how they all are on the road 48, 49 weeks of the year. You know, none of them see their kids. Some of them haven't met their kids.
Right.
And he's like relating to her and he's really comforting her. And I just like really love that scene and interaction. I thought it was super sweet.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, you mentioned earlier how like the second one is almost like a retread in a lot of ways of the first one. And even in sort of some of its like emotional impact, like both movies have an older, wiser kind of figure that mentors like Kevin in a little way. Like the second one has, is it just the bird lady, the pigeon lady in the second one?
Pigeon lady.
Yeah. Who's same
thing. SNL did more homework. SNL did a great parody of her. I believe it was like Kate McKinnon or somebody played the bird lady, was like her murdering all of like the bandits and criminals and stuff. And it was like what it would have been like if the movie were not PG, and it's super disturbing. And it's like basically watching the movie The Birds instead. It's a,
that's great. Yeah,
but once again, I mean, I think that movie really showed us as kids that, like, you know, people who live on the streets or neighbors who walk around and are brooding, if that's the word, and are, you know, dark and by themselves and creepy and all of that, like, they're not bad people. They're just, I mean, the neighbor is so lonely. Like, everybody thinks that he's this massive serial killer and he's just this guy who's lonely and sad. And it's just like, if Kevin never got left home alone, that guy would have just died by himself in his house. He would have never reunited with his kids.
It's true. And I like the way they play up his character too throughout the movie, because he's got like that music that hits, which is like kind of creepy, or like when he throws his hand down on the counter, you know, when he's at the store stealing the toothbrush and he just kind of stares at him all creepy. Like, there was a couple opportunities there where he probably could have reached out, but I like that they just kept playing that, okay, this guy, we don't know what he's doing, and then they have that humble moment in the church.
Yeah, that church scene is so fantastic. Yeah, I love this movie. I mean, I loved it as a kid, but it's one of those movies I probably haven't watched this in like 10 years. And now I'm revisiting and it hits so differently. And, you know, it's a magical movie. I got to watch the second one again. I got to fast forward through the Donald Trump scene, but I'd like to.
He's in it for like 10 seconds, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think all he says is he just asks him where like the concierge is. And he's just like, oh, it's right down there. And that's like literally all he says, you know, like.
It's Tim Curry in the second one, right?
Yeah. Oh, I forgot because about I think, that. Yeah, he's the.
I thought it said Rob Schneider in the credits too.
I think he said it too.
Rob Schneider is.
Yeah, they're both.
Yeah, he plays the bell, or the, you know, bellhop or whatever they call him. You know, the serviceman. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy, because that was like early Rob Schneider too.
Very early.
It's before he's popping up in Adam Sandler movies. Yeah.
What is the premise of the second one? They go to New York.
Or Kevin goes to New York.
And the bandits are just there.
They escape. I'm pretty sure they like somehow escape prison and. I'm pretty sure Kevin has his father's credit card, so like he's able to like stay in like a super nice ritzy hotel, and then I think the actual scene when they're getting, you know, all the pranks and hijinks occur, like he's in like a broken down home or something, like right in the city, like it's like a dilapidated, you know, like home or something, or apartment complex or something. I forget how he finds it or leads leads them there. I also haven't, yeah, I haven't seen the second one in quite a while. But
yeah, it was his uncle's house. So it was, you know, Kevin's dad's brother. He's because there's a scene there where he's like, well, maybe he'll think to look up my brother, which he does. There's a scene where he finds the address book, finds this house that's going through all these renovations, and that's where he builds his little fun house for the sticky bandits in the second one.
That's right.
His fun house, his torture home.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, like, okay, here's a question I have. Obviously, at the end, the family's like, what were you up to, Kevin? He's like, I went shopping for eggs and all of that. If I were Kevin, I would have been like, here's what I did. I got these people arrested. I burned their faces off. Because the second movie, when Kevin is once again getting shit on by his whole family for just asking a freaking question, they would have been like, you know what, Kevin? Actually, no, Kevin, have the pizza. Like,
yeah, you can sleep in my room, Kevin. It's okay. Like,
you can sleep in the king bed. Yeah. Like, please don't hurt us. Don't, like, mousetrap our whole house. I mean, he should have been like, listen, you're in my fucking house now, guys. Like, this is, do you know what I did to these?
Well, you know, there's some of that movie logic. And also, one thing I thought was hilarious is that, obviously, Marv saves him. You know, he knocks the bandits out with a shovel, and then he brings him back home. And, you know, it's like another, I don't know, 8 hours before his family shows up again. And I guess he cleaned up everything. Like, he did some pretty, like, he did a lot of damage to the house, but he still was able to, like, clean everything up pretty fast, which I'm like, hey, it's impressive.
That's a good point. I was going to bring up that same thing, because that house was absolutely destroyed. I mean, there was, you know, he put, like, what was it, turpentine on the stairs.
Yeah.
He had, you know, the sheet of ice out front. He heated up the door handle. There was the basement's flooded. I mean, there's all kinds of chaos going on. Walls are getting broke down. The treehouse gets destroyed in the backyard.
Yeah. Yeah. That treehouse gets destroyed. Yeah. It's okay. So let me ask you guys this, I guess. If I know there's a new Home Alone movie, but if this movie were made today, what are some of the differences with today's technology? Like, my theory would be the mom and dad come home. Kevin's like, I went shopping. And they're like, and then the whole family goes to bed and the mom and dad are on their security camera watching everything Kevin did. And the next day he goes to, like, an insane asylum and they're like, we need to check it. Like, I mean, like, what else could have happened in today's world? Of course, you have Siri. You can have Siri call her and have the cops show up. But I feel like he could have, like, YouTubed even more disturbing traps. He could have, you know. What are ways to terrorize people who are breaking into your house? And there have been stories. There was one I saw recently, but there have been stories of people who break into somebody's house, trip on, like, their steps and fall down, and then sue the homeowners. That's, like, happened a few times. That's, like, a thing that is.
Right. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So they could have technically sued Kevin and been like, we were here to rob you, but what you did was way worse than what we were going to do. I mean, like, we were just going to take your jewelry, man. Like, this is sadistic. You go to prison for a lot longer for doing what he did to them than stealing somebody's, you know, pearls. Yeah.
Kevin definitely took the Make My Day law to a whole new level. And I love when he introduced the film. I think it was like Angels and Envy, you know, where he utilizes the audio from that film, which, by the way, was made specifically for Home Alone. It wasn't a real movie. I thought it was until recently.
Yeah, yeah, they did a great job. They actually filmed it on, like, black and white negatives. Like, they were legit with it. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that scene a lot where he's got the firecrackers. You know, Marv's coming out to check out what's going on. He books it back to the van and he's like, someone just got blown away.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, and the pizza delivery kid when he shows up and he thinks he's getting shot at.
Love it.
I love the statue that gets knocked over in the second movie as well.
Yeah,
definitely a lot of recycled material, but not in a bad way. So have you guys seen the third, the fourth, the seventh?
Yeah. Actually, I was going to ask you guys if you've seen the third one, because that's really the only other one besides the first two that I actually have some memories of. I remember actually watching that one a lot when I was younger. And it's interesting, though, because, like, that one still has, like, some pretty, like, really cool traps in it. And obviously not as good as the first two. Doesn't really have the same, you know, doesn't really hit those same emotional beats. The kid isn't quite as good as Macaulay Culkin. But I just find it funny that they went from the wet bandits, who are supposed to be these, like, your run-of-the-mill, trashy, like, burglars. And then, like, in the third one, it's, like, it's like these operatives working for, like, the North Korean, like, a terrorist organization. They're trying to, like, obtain, like, a microchip. So it's like they just, like, jump, like, full steam ahead with the villains of that movie. Also interesting is that the third one is directed by the editor of the first two, Raja
cool.
Gosnell, who actually made the first live action Scooby-Doo movies, and Beverly Hills Chihuahuas oh, cool. and all these other weird kid movies.
So the linear thing, Home Alone in 1990, Home Alone 2 in 1992, got to get that money back. Home Alone 3 in 1997. Home Alone 4, which should have been called like Home Alone for the Holidays. Like there you could have gotten a little more creative. Home Alone 4 in 2002, then just like they did with the Karate Kid and I believe Hilary Swank, they did a girl Home Alone, Home Alone the Holiday Heist, which that one is that's the fifth one.
Is that that's what Malcolm McDowell, right?
That's what Malcolm McDowell and Debbie Mazur, Ed Asner. And then there's the one that came out this year on Disney Plus, Home Sweet Home Alone, which follows the British family. Yeah, and it has Buzz in it too, which that's in the trailer. I don't think that's a major spoiler, but the actor who plays Buzz reprises his role, and he is now, if I can spoil a little bit of it, in it, he is now a cop in the same town. And every year, Kevin calls the police and says, hey, there's a home being burglarized, and somebody needs to go and stop it. And Kevin plays pranks on Officer Buzz every year. So in this movie, when somebody calls the police, Buzz just takes that as Kevin McAllister messing with him still. So it's a great way to like include them still in the universe and like make it a linear kind of movie. I liked it. It's not the original. It's not the same, but if you like SNL, you'll like a lot of the cast and the people in this. It's a lot of stand-up comedians.
Yeah. Yeah. The cast was good. You know, I like that. What's her name that played Erin in The Office. I like that she was in it.
LA Kemper.
Oh yeah.
Yep. He was great. There was some things I liked about it. I liked the play on when they were watching a movie and he gets up and walks off. It's like, you know, the remakes are just never as good as the original. There was like a couple little subtle hints at it that they knew what they were doing. And the fact that Buzz McAllister, the actual actor, plays, you know, Officer McAllister or whatever and reports to that house, I thought was pretty cool. I thought those two things stood out to me.
I also just have to bring up as well, we've talked about it before on the podcast. I recommended it to somebody earlier. If you have Disney Plus, watch the Mighty Ducks TV show. It is like the best reboot, sequel, follow-up, whatever imaginable. It is so fantastic. It pays so much homage to it. It's linear. You find out what Gordon Bombay's been up to. There's cameos. And it's just, it's not kitschy. It's not stupid. It's not shitty. There's no part in it where you're like, eh, it was fun. It was a nice reimagining. It is just like such a fantastic show. And I think that so many things have come along and ruined it now that once you see, oh, the Mighty Ducks is being rebooted, like I have no interest in it. I highly recommend this. And while you're at it on Disney Plus, Home Alone 1, Home Alone 2, Home Alone, the new one. I think there's probably a couple more on there as well, all together.
On Disney Plus?
But it's
I think they're all on there, honestly.
Yeah, I'd imagine, especially at Christmas time.
I think it was only the first three that were distributed by or produced. Yeah, distributed by 20th Century Fox. I think the remaining three were Disney.
And the director of the new one, so he wrote for Borat, like the TV show, the Ali G show. He directed, of course, this new Home Alone. And then as soon as my browser opens, I believe he's directed like Bruno and some of the Borat movies.
For the new
movies.
One? Okay.
Yeah, oh, wow. Yeah. He did Who is America, the new Sacha Baron Cohen. So it's cool. I mean, that's one of my favorite things about Robert Rodriguez. You know, Will Ferrell started doing kids movies when his kids got older and started appreciating cinema. You know, Robert Rodriguez does hard R vampire torture movies and then does Spy Kids. Like, I like this because this guy does Ali G and then he's like, oh, I'm going to make the new Home Alone, like something to actually enjoy with my children. So I always like when you see a director who can pull that off. But then also, you know, just do it because they're passionate about it. I think that's always really cool.
Yeah, definitely. I'll check it out eventually. Maybe while I'm still home.
That's fun.
Yeah, because
it's fun.
I like everyone in it. That's the one thing I'll say that's pretty like consistent in all these movies is like the cast is always pretty stacked. Like they always have like there's always like a handful of really good actors in like all of these movies.
Who wouldn't sign on for it? I mean, especially like they were all like kids. Some of these people were kids when the original came out. And why wouldn't you sign up to do it? So I know, Kevin, you had mentioned this being your Christmas movie. Tom, what is your Christmas movie?
I don't, honestly, it's pretty like pretty standard, pretty obvious choice. But I'm probably going to just go with A Christmas Story.
Okay. Nice.
Because, you know, it's obviously they play it on TBS. Like they literally play it 24 hours on Christmas. But Like it's just classic. Like every scene hits. It's super funny. And I also just love how it looks like it was filmed like 30 years before it was actually made. I think it was made in the early to mid 80s, almost like maybe 82, 83. But you know, like there's like a certain, like there's these like almost like muted pastel colors in it. Like, you know, obviously it takes place, I think, in the late 40s, 50s. The lenses they used must have, I don't know, they must have used old lenses, because I feel like the whole movie has this like almost like a soft blurry like halo around everything. It just looks, it really looks beautiful.
Yeah,
like I say, it's just classic. That's a great one. And then I also love watching, actually I have a little like set here. I just bought this randomly one year. I don't even can see it because I have the green screen thing, but it's like a it's just like a Christmas classic thing. So, you know, like
the claymations,
yeah, the Rankin Bass, like Santa Came to Town, and like, you know, like the weird like stop motion, you know, that's all fun to watch. How the Grinch Stole Christmas, super fun to watch. And actually, another movie I didn't mention earlier, but have you guys ever seen, it came out back in 2014. It's just called A Merry Freaking Christmas. It's actually one of Robin Williams' last performances.
I believe so. Who else? Is Joel McHale?
Joel McHale, yeah. It also another stacked cast. Robin Williams, Joel McHale, Tim Heidecker, like it just has like so many people. Oh, wow. Yeah. And it was produced by the Russo brothers, who directed a lot of episodes of Community, obviously went on to do Avengers and everything. So
yeah,
I'm like, how was this made? Like, who decided to make this? And because it was just kind of okay overall. Like it almost felt like they stitched together Christmas Vacation and like Planes, Trains, Automobiles, except just not as good as those movies. Even with Robin Williams in it, but it was fun enough. It had some good jokes in it. It was fun enough to watch.
Super interesting to do a Christmas movie. I was watching Shark Tank recently, and they did the Christmas episode where people are coming on pitching Christmas products, and the sharks are going, "This is seasonal. Why am I going to sign on to buy something that's going to be popular for November and December?" I think it's the same with movies. Why compete? Why compete and try to make a Christmas movie? Because that's got to be so hard to do, to override the other famous Christmas movies and be something that people are only going to watch once a year,
well,
or 1 month during the year.
I will say one of the more recent Christmas movies in recent memory that I think is fantastic, and I think we'll actually be able to, you know, stand the test of time, is we reviewed it. We talked about it, Krampus.
Krampus. Have you seen it, Kevin?
Yeah, I saw it a while back. I need a refresher on it.
Yeah, it's great movie. Great ending.
It's like, it's cool because it has like, it is a good Christmas movie, but it's also just so sadistic and cruel, and like it's fun, and you know, it has
good
evil,
horror,
evil
comedy,
creepy gingerbread men. It's great.
They had like six Redbox like spin-off straight to DVDs at the same time. I think they just came out with another one too. For me, I love Elf, of course.
Oh yeah,
the Santa Claus with the
Tim Allen.
No, well that too. The Vince Vaughn one. What's the Vince Vaughn one?
Oh, Fred Claus. Is that?
Fred Claus, oh, that Fred one's Claus. Great. I love Fred the Claus. Santa Claus. I love Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, Christmas
and then Vacation. My Christmas go-to movie with me, my family, is Love Actually. It's Love Actually. I love it. It's a great Christmas movie. It's got a great cast. It's got great story. I've gone on to watch other movies the director made. I love Love Actually. That's like my family's Christmas movie every year. That, and then definitely Elf. My mom loves to watch Fred Claus because she loves Vince Vaughn so much. But that would be mine. And I guess, you know, I was going to ask. Somebody mentioned Harry Potter earlier. Is Harry Potter a Christmas movie?
The first one?
I think so, right? Some of them take place right around Christmas.
Yeah, or at least like part of the movie is like around the Christmas time. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's like a question that, you know, like I remember years ago when like it was like when people started calling Die Hard a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
It was, you know, and now I feel like there's so many other movies in this like echelon where it's like, oh, is this a Christmas movie? Is this a Christmas movie? And it's like, I don't know. Sure. Like if you want it to be a Christmas movie, like if it's just like, I think it's really just up to you at this point, because like
that's too easy.
Yeah.
Is Nightmare Before Christmas a Christmas movie? Is it a Halloween movie? What else is
Gremlins are kind of in there?
Yeah.
Yes. What else? Gremlins what else is there? There's got to. It's got to be a lot more out there, right? That is.
Well, like
what else is
like what Christmas movies that you're not quite sure Christmas movies is that we're trying to get at?
I'm gonna Google, is it a Christmas movie? I feel like there's a website where you can like plug in a movie and it will tell you if it is.
Well, I've even heard like people would question if Home Alone's even a Christmas movie because it's not. I mean, not that a Christmas movie has to take place just on Christmas Day, but like the majority of the movie, you know, it's like, could it be said it's about anything traditionally Christmas? But I mean, I think it is ultimately.
And Frozen, absolutely.
Yeah, and the setting is such, you know, the Christmas setting is such a big part of its identity too. So I would definitely.
Batman Returns.
Oh.
Batman Returns. Oh, yeah. Yep. Eyes Wide Shut. Catch Me If
You Can.
I've
heard that too. Eyes Wide Shut.
The Harry Potter movies. Interesting. Very interesting.
Any movie that slightly takes place during the holiday season has snow in it, it's a Christmas movie now. Sure.
I guess that's the rules.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
30 Days a Night. 30 Days a Night takes place during winter.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned Vince Vaughn too. He did what I just watched with him. He did a movie with who did he co-star with? It was called Four Christmases.
Yeah,
it's comedy. Yeah.
John Favreau, Reese Witherspoon.
Yep. Yeah, Reese Witherspoon. That was the other actress I was thinking of. Yeah. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, The Holiday. Everybody loves The Holiday with Jack Black. That's another one.
Oh, and Kate Winslet, right?
Yeah, I think I've seen it. Jude Law. They do like a house swap or something like that. There's that one.
Isn't that where they do a house swap and like they fall in love with each other's like partners or something? I don't know.
Yeah. It's like Jack Black and Cameron Diaz or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot more out there. And I just want to recommend too, if you have HBO Max, 8-Bit. Have you seen that yet, Kevin?
No, I haven't seen that, but I have HBO Max, so I'll put it on the list.
Neil Patrick Harris. It's pretty much a modern day Christmas story. Yeah. Him and his daughter. Present day are waiting for the grandparents to show up. She finds this old archaic Nintendo, and I'm talking about NES, Nintendo Entertainment System, and she's like, what the hell is this, Dad? And he tells the whole story of being like 8 years old and everybody wanting to get their hands on the first Nintendo. It's a June Diane Raphael, Steve Zahn, Neil Patrick Harris, and to me, I'd say it's a Christmas story of today. I think it could definitely be a classic. I think our generation is right there with it, and it just like it makes you so nostalgic watching the whole entire movie. It's really, really fantastic. So I would definitely recommend that. And it's a risk. It's a risk making a new Christmas movie or ever making something where you're like, this is the new Christmas story. And you're like, whoa, bud.
Right.
Whoa, bud. Hold up. But I thought it was really good.
Good recommendation. Yeah, I'll check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think any other closing thoughts on Home Alone 1 through 7, 15?
Yeah. How many are there? What did we decide? Is it seven?
Six.
Six.
One, two, three, four. The girl one in 2012,
and then the Home Sweet Home Alone.
So six, yeah. Right? Six, yeah. Total Home Alone movies. Yeah.
Six total
at the moment.
At the moment, I wonder if you can buy it in a set.
I'm sure you could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, sure now that could. Disney owns Fox, yeah, they can all release them all.
I know the Full House complete series on DVD comes in the house.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there's like a Home Alone, if you can buy it in like a house or something.
That's a pretty epic house. I know a lot of people go out there as a tourist destination to see that place outside of Chicago.
Is that where it is? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw the Goonies house out in Oregon. So a little while outside of Portland, I believe. I think it was Astoria. Astoria is the rock that Free Willy jumped over. So I got to go see that rock. And okay. Then the Goonies house. And as we were pulling up the street of the Goonies house, there are signs that are like, turn the fuck around if you're here for the Goonie house. And then you get to the Goonies house and there's a for sale sign outside of it. It's the same as in New Mexico, Breaking Bad.
Just gonna say, because I went there.
People
this
were
year.
Throwing pizzas. People were throwing pizzas well, I didn't on do that, top
but,
of the house.
But no, people were doing that at one point. And actually, because I drove through, I did a huge road trip this year and I knew I was driving through Albuquerque and like, I got to check out Walter White's house. And they got a fence up. They got a sign that's like, if you want to take pictures, just be on the other side of the street. I didn't even get out of my car. I just parked like a creep, like on the across from the house, just like watching, like looking at the house. And the owner was outside and there was like some other people that were driving through and stopping. And I could tell she was annoyed, but it's like nothing you can do about it.
Don't buy the house.
Well,
don't buy the house.
In her case, I think they already owned the house before the show. And then they came to them, hey, can we use the exterior of your house for our show? Just this little no show Breaking Bad. It's probably not going to become anything big. And then, you know.
There's a guy named Tom who's going to watch it every day for the rest of his life.
Yeah, no, I don't talk about it enough.
If there's ever like a game show of like Breaking Bad trivia or something.
He's the one.
You could win.
That's like the only show I think I could like, I would actually excel at.
Yeah. I think I want to go back and restart Better Call Saul because I only watched a couple seasons.
Honestly, like in a lot of ways, just as good. is Breaking Bad.
Yeah. I was just watching Mr. Show again the other day. So I'm like,
oh, classic.
In the Bob Odenkirk mood right now. Yeah. Well, Kevin, we want to say thank you so much for coming on.
Yes.
We know you're busy with your podcast. Discussion Combustion, where can people find it? Where's the go-to? What are your social media handles?
Yeah, definitely. We're just about everywhere. You know, I'm going to lead you with the YouTube Discussion Combustion YouTube channel. You can watch all of our shows over there. You can watch Mikey Wheel. I think you were episode 57, if I'm not mistaken, the one that cranked the hardest. So definitely check that out on YouTube. Anywhere you get your podcasts, you know, Spotify, Stitcher, you know, Amazon, you name it. We're on all of it. Just type it in. You'll find us. Social media across the board at DCPC Podcast on Twitter, Discussion Combustion on Instagram and Facebook. And yeah, if you want to find us, you know where to go.
And God, that last sentence you said, I feel like we should cut off the podcast there. That was so like news anchor worthy. If you can tell us, who are some of the, you know, upcoming guests that you have?
Yeah. So we have Fox 31's Kylie Burse. She's with us tomorrow night. That's going to be a lot of fun. Closing out the year with Mike Patchen, CEO of Mountain Made CBD. We're working on getting a state legislator in as well. He's kind of, it's going to be tangible on his schedule. And then we're kicking off 2022 rolling hard. We got a whole new lineup of guests coming. You know, I'd have to pull out our schedule, but we're booked out quite a ways. So looking forward to it, man.
Awesome. Beautiful. Well, when you get to 2 million views, we're going to have you back on and talk about another movie.
I look forward to that. I look forward to seeing my co-host Arthur Rock come on your show and talk some movies with you guys. Love what you guys do. Tom, Mikey, season's greetings to you guys. Thanks so much for thinking of me to come on. Had a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks,
man.
For the inspiration too.